Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores. Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect to your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody, wherever you are in the world. Hope you're having a fantastic weekend. I'm here with Sasha Wall. Huge thanks to her for coming on, sharing her life story. A huge part of it is the Essex Boys case. There's been fascination, endless fascination, theories around what happened to the three men who were assassinated in the vehicle. And Sasha came on. And, you know, in summary, did not rule out the possibility that it was the cops, a network of cops, Freemason cops, that may have ended their lives. So we had Billy Jasper on about a month ago, and a lot of what Sasha said parallels with what Billy Jasper said. And his podcast, they tried to close it down. They tried to shut him up. He's been in prison. He's done almost 40 years throughout his life. But, you know, he's got a right to reply about the things that have been said to him on this story. And they still tried to shut it down. It was a real shame. But Sasha's here now, and she's got a lot to say. So a huge thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Sean. Thanks for having me, and thanks for inviting me. And I really enjoyed our conversation. It was good to start talking again, really.
Yeah. I mean, there's murders every single day. All over the news, you know, things are getting more and more violent all over the world. Why do you think there's so much fascination still in the Essex Boys case? Because it happened so long ago.
I think there's a lot of reasons. Obviously, when so many books, so many films have been made about this particular event, then of course it is actually creating not just a kind of local audience or a UK audience, it's creating a worldwide audience. It was sensational. I think it was, I personally think it was purposely sensationalized as a deterrent to other people that thought they could get cocky with the police and the network that are involved with them. Also, that's how stories are made. That's how papers are sold. That's how programs are made. If there's no sensational death, you know, then nobody can, you know, can make much of it. And then, of course, there's a reason that there's so many lies being told. And I think everybody knows that amongst that sensationalism and misinformation, which can just be mistakes, there's so much purposeful disinformation. And when this kind of assassination occurs, I do believe that it's very, very meticulously planned. Nothing's left to chance. All kinds of people can be put in the picture so that no one person is going to be looking like they're it's obviously them, because that's how people get away with things, you know? I think that the people that have been noisy about it since the start as well, and people that have made careers out of it, have kind of made a rod for their own back, because there is now a kind of a huge audience that really do want to know the truth. And you can't, like, that creates a massive energy. And that's why we are here this particular week. You know, we're 30 years. And it is incredible. Like, I had no real idea until when I came back in with the Sky Murders documentary, is how big the audience was and how many people were still talking about it, and how many films had been made. I knew there was one Rise of the Foot Soldier, and I knew there was a couple of books, but I didn't realize how massive it had got. And because so many people did give it the large one on it, and also we live in a time when people really want the truth, I believe. You know, like,
yes. So I'm going to put the link, because some people have logged onto the live and they've not seen. We've just done a 2.5-hour podcast with Sasha. Did Freemason Cops Do the Essex Boys, it's called. So if you've not seen that, I'm going to put it in the description box. And I'm also going to put it in the live chat right now. That's the story in a lot of detail. But you've had a few people log on, Sasha, who are not familiar with the case at all. Mm-hmm. And they're just asking if you could just give a brief summary of what happened.
So the brief summary is on the 11th of November 1995, it all kicked off with Leah Betts's party. And Leah Betts is notoriously known as the 18-year-old who dropped into a coma at her 18th birthday party. And then 5 days later, her life support machine was turned off. But even before that, during that week, it went into the massive tabloid press. And this particular part of the story is so well known, even though it's not really spoken about in these other films that are all about the actual shooting of Craig Rolfe, Pat Tate and Tony Tucker, which happened 3 weeks later. It all really did begin with Leah Betts's party and the manhunt around the killer A. And that was how it was put out into the mainstream press. So even before she'd died, and obviously it was incredibly tragic, but it was big, big, big news, and it became world news, and she became the poster girl for not doing E's. That all happened. Then there was this massive manhunt for the Dealers of Death, which was how it was being put out by the scandalous Sun and general tabloid press. But, you know, also The Independent, The Guardian, all these kind of people were hot on this. It's poison, it's all of this. And then 2 weeks later, three guys from Essex, so Tony Tucker and Pat Tate were both in their mid-30s. And Craig Rolfe was younger, he was about 10 years younger than them, in his mid-20s. And between the hours of 6 p.m. and midnight, on the 6th of December, they had their brains blown out, basically, in a Range Rover down a country lane in Rettenden, which is kind of basically between Basildon and Chelmsford. It was put out that Tony Tucker was the person that was supplying the thrills to Raquel's, which was where I worked as a barmaid, on a Friday night only. And so it was then put out in the press that it was the dealers of the the he that had unlivened Leah had now been dealt with. And so it was as if to say they deserved what was coming to them. And these people had been taken off the streets. So that was all a good thing. That's the case set up in a nutshell.
Yeah, so tragically, a girl, young girl, Leah Betts, died from taking the E. And her father was a police officer. And when Billy Jasper came on, he didn't rule out that the father had a motive and the connections, his colleagues, etc., and the Freemason connection to possibly get the guys they thought were responsible. So did you get a chance to watch the Billy Jasper podcast? And if so, what did you think?
Yeah. So I thought it was really interesting. And I know a lot of people have said, you know, he definitely did write that statement and, you know, or that the police wrote it, but it was his words. But in general, I thought Billy had a lot of balls to, you know, being in his position, having just come out. I was very interested in the fact that he believes that he was kept in or brought back in for a year just so that he couldn't talk about this case. Because this is when the whole Billy Jasper theory was being put out. And obviously, when your name is being put out like that, like you said, you have got a right to reply. Now, I don't know criminals and police like Billy does. I had, you know, it's been a real wake-up call for me in the last 5 years just to how corrupt the police are. But I do know that criminals and people that have been inside and everything, they know how it goes down. They know the people to look at. I do also believe that Michael Steele had said things similar effect in his parole, when he was trying to get parole, that it was corrupt police officers that were involved, and that we should be looking closer at that. And so I agreed with what Billy Jasper said on the fact that we should be allowed to look closely at this ex-Met police officer. Like I said in the podcast, is not to say that it was definitely him that shot the boys, and I don't think it probably was. I do believe it was a network that were intent on getting rid of these three who were being cocky, who were up to a lot of naughty stuff and driving around in flash cars and you know, like, you might as well have had kind of dealer of the on a sign on the top of the car, basically. But that was what it was like at the time, and they weren't the only ones. There was a good few Essex boys, as it were, that were doing very, very similar stuff. And of course, there's no way that Tony and Pat and Craig were the ones supplying the whole of Essex, but there's absolutely no way that's the case. So I do believe that Billy knows a lot, more than he's ever going to say, obviously. And I do believe that we are right to look at Paul Betts and really investigate all of the things he said, not just about the boys, but about what happened at the party, you know, about who he was and how the fact he did already know who Tony Tucker was before anything happened to his daughter.
Yeah, so a few people in the chat said they've not seen the Billy Jasper podcast yet. So I'm putting the link to that one also in the description box. I'm going to also put it in the live chat right now. So how does this theory then cross over into the Freemasons? Is that because so many cops are known to be in the Freemasons? Or do we know for sure, for example, was Leah Betts' dad a Freemason?
So I've been told by another Mason, obviously I can't divulge my sources, but they have said they're a Mason, that Paul Betts was high up in the Freemasons. He had been a Met police for 28 years, and he'd worked his way up to inspector and he was looking after a team of constables and sergeants. So he wasn't just like a local bobby or anything. 28 years. There's been a load of confusion regarding him being a firearms officer for the Met. Now, Billy said that he, as he understood it, it was. And if you put it into Grok or put it into AI, that will tell you that he was. However, I think it might be down to the fact that this has been put in the press so many times that that's why it says he was a firearms officer. He has said, from what I can, from in actual statements, that he shot in competition for the Met, i.e. clay pigeon shooting, that kind of gun competitions. So, yes, he was really handy with a gun. And he had started a clay pigeon shooting business just after he'd been retired from the Met. So when all of this happened, he had only been retired a couple of months before, and he was only 46. And this was a medical retirement, you know, one of those medical retirements. Anyway, apparently he'd been attacked by a woman at a wedding and something had happened to his eye. And so he was going blind in one eye, and that was why he was retired. So obviously he has lost all of his power at the moment. I think this is something to really recognise about Paul Betts, as in he's been this big inspector and he's working in Romford, Hornchurch and Upminster. And this is where Hollywood's Romford is. And that's where Tony Tucker was doing the door. So this is his patch where Tony's doing the door, and this is how he knew him. Now, I know there's a really, really strong Freemason network that has been involved with the media, the police, and how, you know, how a lot of people were elevated, and that is the connection here. Nigel Benn, Tony was mates with. It was said that he was doing security, but he was kind of more mates with him, because Nigel Benn had some like proper high level security and Tony wasn't that. Tony was a doorman. So from what I gather, the only way, like things like the crime scene was corrupted, there was a lot of manipulation with statements, a lot of people not looked at properly. And from what I gather, this is because of the Masonic network's cover up, and that it possibly was a contract through that network that was done on these boys. I never thought it was as simple as like Michael Steele and Jack Holmes just like rocked up, shot them, got away with it, wandered off. You know, it never rung true. It's something that is very, very difficult to get away with. And this network, you know, I've been told that he was really high up with the Freemasons, and there is quite a lot of Masonic links. Obviously, I think there's Masonic links at White House Farm. And the people that they were hanging around with.
So
within this kind of media circuit. Sorry, go on.
So you've touched on the other side of this then. No Freemason cops have ever been convicted of these murders, but people did go to prison. And could you just name who went to prison and what kind of evidence was supposedly presented against them?
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know every single detail on this case because, you know, I haven't researched all of the statements. I mean, there is absolutely huge amounts, but it was Jack Holmes and Michael Steele that went to prison for it. I believe it was Michael Steele that they said that had shot him shot them, and Holmes was with him. These were older guys. They were involved in dealing. They did know them, but they weren't the only ones. I believe Darren Nichols, who is the Supergrass. He said that he was the getaway driver and he basically grassed them. And it was mainly his testimony that meant that they got locked away for 30 years. They always pleaded their innocence. They never admitted it, which was one of the reasons why they stayed inside for so long. They are both out on parole now. They've been gagged. They are not allowed to talk. So again, you know, it's Billy was lucky to be able to be taught, to be able to talk, because I know Steele and Holmes have been gagged, and even though they're in their 80s, they, you know, even though they've done their time, they're still not allowed to talk to anybody about this case. Why?
So have they said that they were the shooters then, those two?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, did they say that Billy Jasper was the driver? Is that what they said?
No. So in this case, Darren Nichols said he was the driver. The Billy Jasper theory was not used in court. It was not listened to or taken as valid at the time.
What's that theory?
What, the Billy Jasper theory?
Yeah.
Basically, that Billy Jasper was the getaway driver, I believe. I would say James Waldron, who is like my, he's been researching this case for so many years, and so he will validate all the ins and outs and details, because I always go to him to find out who's who, because there's so many names in this case. You know, like I said, I've only just come into it in the last couple of years, and I actually was interested in what happened at Leo Butts's party and not who shot them. However, in the last couple of years, everything has got closer and closer to Paul Betts' involvement. And the more people that push you away from that, and you know, no, it couldn't happen in a million years, he had nothing to do with it. No, I will say that Albert Patrick, who did come to my house to talk to me about the Essex Boys case, he's the only one from TMI, and he said that he hadn't ruled out that Paul Betts was involved, personally, to me. So I've just found more and more and more and more stuff out about Paul Betts. It just made me more and more suspicious that he was actually involved in setting these boys up.
Do you want me to get James on the screen?
Yeah.
James, I'm going to put a link in the live chat. Just click it and you'll be on the screen if you're coming on.
He wants to.
Sounds like you know a lot. And
he knows an awful lot.
It would be interesting to get your take on it.
We always thought it was a hit. I can see his comment there. We always thought it was a hit. You know?
Yeah.
Like, we always thought right back then, as youngsters, we always thought that the police were involved, because we knew that there was this massive crackdown that they were doing on everybody involved in everything around the area, which was why I was raided, I believe, a couple of weeks before. But I believe there is a certain person that's very noisy in this case that was pointing the finger and directions elsewhere from himself. So going,
James is with us.
Yay.
Hey James, thanks for coming on at such short notice.
James,
you're welcome.
Yeah. If you've been listening so far, then what would you like to add? Because it sounds like you certainly know a lot.
Well, regarding Mr. Paul Betts, I think we'll start there. Okay. He was the first person pulled in for the murders of Patrick Tate, Tony Tucker and Craig Rolfe. The first prime suspect in the case was Paul Betts. In his statement, and in his wife's statement, Janet Betts, there's half an hour missing from 9 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. Now, I've tried to find out what's happened to this missing half an hour. I can't get no answers.
Yeah. And it is, I mean, the statement, I downloaded it last week. The statement is very, very, very suspect. And obviously it is a police officer that's writing it. So, it's very suspect.
And a certain police informant put all them out there in the first place.
What was that? A police informant put it out? Oh.
Put it out there in the first place, yeah. Yeah, with Brian Rolfe and his mum Lorraine, they got it taken down, got his website taken down.
And Paul Betts was only interviewed, him and Janet were interviewed immediately the next day, but only at his house. You know, they were taken to separate rooms. Paul Betts talks about it and says that he thought how funny and Leah would be laughing in heaven about it, which is just really weird. Like, this is one of the things that I've found with Paul Betts when I've been watching all these different videos and all the different press that he did. The things that he said were really weird and really, like, kind of give you that, like, that's a really dark and weird thing to say. Like, about the boys, he said that their death wasn't quick enough and they should have had a slow lingering death.
Which ain't entirely true, because...
I mean, who says that anyway, you know? Like, and like I said, it wasn't that his daughter had any actual direct contact with these guys, but he spoke about them as if they had actually, like, done her in themselves. That's how, you know, and it was really, really dark. Now, yes, you could say, oh, he was a grieving father, but, you know, he just looked like a really nasty father.
Well, let's just put this out there, yeah? If you found out Tony Tucker had supplied a pill to your daughter and your daughter died, what would you think? What would you do about it? What would you want to do about it?
I'd want them arrested and to talk about it.
You'd try and confirm it first, wouldn't you, before you went full on?
Well, I've tried to make people aware of this. There is a documentary out there. I believe it was from Channel 4 Dispatches. Paul Betts went into Basildon Police Station and warned them about Tony Tucker supplying pills months, yeah. 3-4 months before the murders. So around about the time he retired.
Yeah, he does say that in his statement that he knew of him before.
Which in the timeline ties in with the raid at Hollywood's. It ties in.
Yeah, and so that is another good point as to the fact of, so there was a lot of raids going on at clubs around that time. And as the criminal justice bill had come in, they had, you know, been going to Club UK and certain clubs, but then there was other clubs that weren't being touched, like Ministry of Sound and things like that, that were being allowed to get away with things. Obviously, if Paul Betts had thought it was Tony that actually gave that E2 Leah, then of course he might be really upset about it. He knew that he really did know that, because the person that was giving out those at Raquel's was well known. It really was well known in the area. Everybody knew what was going on. And so for the finger to be pointed at Tony, who was doing the door at Hollywood's in Romford, which is 45 minutes away, when this is all happening at around Raquel's and Basildon, it just didn't make any sense.
Do you think it's because they were the loudest, so they just went to them because they were like the face of? There's a theory here from AC. I'm going to read it to you and get both of your opinions on it.
I think it was somebody who was specifically pointing the finger at Tony,
yeah,
i.e. informing.
Paul Betts, this is what AC's theory is. Paul Betts was allegedly part of a group of flying squad officers and other NCA officers that were robbing dealers and robbers dressed as Army Special Forces men. Check who he was involved with. It is interesting. Do you think there's any credence to that?
I've been told this, but I've not been able to find any actual evidence of it. David McKelvey is saying that is not correct, and that he was just a neighbourhood community police inspector. So, but I haven't actually seen anything to verify either, because that, you know, that's what Billy Jasper said as well. And there is loads of things in loads of press articles. It says that Paul Betts was a firearms officer, and he's let those press articles go out. He hasn't asked them to be retracted. It hasn't been changed. And so, as you can imagine, over a like 25-year period, it's been repeated and repeated and repeated. So, you know, if that is the truth, then I would love to find out some actual evidence of it, because if he was, could have well been part of the hit squad.
Well, he owned 13 guns. He owned 13 guns at the time. Yeah.
So that's in his police statement that there's 13 guns.
So where did he train to learn to use the firearm? It was either White House Farm or it was in an official police capacity training ground. It's common sense, isn't it?
I mean, the White House Farm, which is right next to Workhouse Lane where it all happened, where they were shot. White House Farm is clay pigeon shooting farm and pheasant shooting. This was 15 minutes away from Paul's house. There isn't that many of those kind of shooting clubs, so this would have been his local, so he would have known it very well.
Might be a good time to let you know about this, Sean. TMI that are investigating the case at this minute, they've asked Essex Police for the shotgun cartridges from what happened that night, yeah? Now, obviously, when the killer shot them, he could have possibly had gloves on, like Darren Nichols said. Billy Jasper's never mentioned no gloves getting worn, but Nichols said overalls, wellies, fucking rubber gloves and all that crap. Now, Essex Police won't give us the bullets to forensically retest them, because when they was loaded into the gun, the thumbprint could be on the back of the cartridge. So why won't Essex Police give up them cartridges?
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook, you know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play Stores.
And this is the thing. So there is so much Essex Police corruption known in this case. Everybody that has been delving into this case understand there was police officers sleeping with the same women as the boys were sleeping with. Florence, yeah, that's right. It's very clear that there was an awful lot of corruption that was going on with Essex Police as well. Now, I'm not talking about when we talk about corruption happens at the Masonic Lodge network, where they're all meeting up, whether they be Essex Police, Met Police, guys in the media, doormen, people in security firms, all these people that are meeting up at these kinds of lodges, you know, that is where this, the amount of characters and the cast of this whole actual
There's proof of that. Darren Nichols attending a certain dinner party with certain other people, and they're all Masons, and that's in official documented evidence what people can look at. So when people try and say there's no Freemason involvement in this case, you're talking shit.
And the more times people go, no, no, there's definitely no Freemason involved in this case, you're like, yeah, right. Because it obviously is. There's so many. I mean, the Operation Tiberius, which was looking into corruption within the Met and Masonic connections, there was a call that I think you got it, didn't you, from the Freedom of Information request that you did.
Yeah.
So he did Freedom of Information request. And within that, there was a call that was made on the 16th of November, which is the day that Leah Betts died. It was made by a crime boss, it was put, wasn't it?
TA, yep.
A crime boss to a ex-Met police officer offering to take out the dealers of the pills of Leah.
The hidden handshake.
Which is the hidden handshake. They offered the hand of friendship, the hidden hand. And so that's actually in there, you know, and then 3 weeks later they're gone. You know, now that would never have come out if he hadn't done that Freedom of Information request. And that actual call, when I was first contacted by the Sky Murders research team, they were looking into this. They were heavily looking into it, but then when when the documentary came out, it wasn't in there. I was like, why aren't they saying anything about that Freemason call?
So when you got the evidence that they gave to you, the call, James, was that a transcript or was it a digital like audio file?
I got the complete Tiberius report, but it was heavily redacted. So then I put in another Freedom of Information request and said I want it unredacted. Took them a while, and then I woke up one morning, guess what was in the inbox? Tiberius. And I had to contact a few of the big crime people around London, bro, because if you've read Tiberius, there's a hell of a lot of people named in that report, all over London. So I've had to message people and say, look, I don't want you thinking I'm a grassier, but I've got to publish this report out because it could help the case that I'm helping. And I got the go ahead from a few people named in the report, mate. So I put it out.
Yeah, I mean, he has put loads of work into this case. Like, he knows so much. Like,
shut down.
Yeah, and that's the sad thing, because nobody should be shut down. Whether it be Billy Jasper, James, myself, or anybody, you know, everybody should have their right to speak. We know that there's loads of lies, loads of corruption in this case, and the more we are able to talk about these things without a tirade of abuse and things like that that can come at you, you know, there's always gangsters involved in this case.
Sean, from what I found out in this past 15 years with this case, mate, it's just sad. All round, mate, the whole case is absolutely heartbreaking. When Tony Tucker's parents got a knock on the door by Essex police officers, Tony's mum and dad never knew what Tony got up to ever in his criminal endeavours. His dad dropped dead of a heart attack.
Yeah, immediately.
Ooh. So yeah. Tony Tucker's mum had to bury her son and her husband in the same week.
Yeah,
and same with stuff with the Supergrass with Mr. Darren Nichols. His whole family went into protection, not just him. Now, you've worked on plenty of cases, Sean. You know how the system kind of works yourself. If you turned into a Supergrass, who goes into the system? All your family or just you?
Isn't it all of them?
Just you. Only the person. Just you, okay. Just you. But for some reason, his wife, his sister, his brothers all went into the witness protection program.
Right. Yeah, because I've written about Escobar, and with in Colombia, they kill your whole family, so they got to put the whole family in.
Yeah, if, so they cut the info.
Yeah.
So what if that
was... All right.
They can come out and change, mate.
I think that's the kind of the big thing on this case is that there is so much corruption. We can get to the truth on it, but one of the reasons why it's not come out is because of the police involvement.
Well, there was
so
all down,
viewers,
all brothers.
I'd just like to tell the viewers, if you've got any questions for James or Sasha while we're live right now, if you've got any further questions or comments you want us to discuss, put them in the chat. And I also want to remind the viewers as well that Sasha's got her own YouTube channel, Facebook page, Substack, TikTok, and radio station. All those links are in the description box if you're watching this on replay. And I'm going to put the YouTube channel link in the live chat right now as well. And you've got an interesting collaboration coming up on your channel, haven't you? Are you allowed to mention that yet?
Yeah. On Saturday the 6th of December, which was the date that they were shot, me and Brian are going to commemorate and get together. Brian Rolfe, who is Craig's brother, we're going to be getting together and doing a live show at 6 p.m. that day, just to get together. And so much has been said and so much has been talked about. And we actually just want to make it kind of a nice chat and everybody getting together and to remember, and it not just be about, oh, come on, let everybody needs to know who shot them. And, you know, it doesn't happen like that. There's a lot of us all coming together, and, you know, I've got to know actually lots of nice people from actually talking and communicating about this case, because lots of people have been interested in it. So when you've got like-minded people and you come together, it's, you know, it is nice. And we were all around at the same time, you know, we were all back around in Essex raving in 1995, and yeah, it was, you know, it was a good time. So we are just getting together for a live show, for a Q&A, and just have a bit of a nice chat, really.
So you've got a few comments, questions come in. I'll put this one to both of you. If Betts was involved, why would he mention the missing time in his statement and mention going out driving, leading to all this speculation? It would have been done for him and covered up.
Jason, ask the police that then, isn't it? You're asking the wrong question. You're asking the wrong people the wrong question there, mate. Bring up Essex Police and ask them why he did that. Why did the certain person put that information out there in the first place?
Yeah, I think he was being highly manipulative in his statement. It looks like a very, very covertly manipulated statement.
Paul Betts admitted to driving a 4x4 vehicle near to the lane at the time around the murders supposedly had happened, but yet his tire tracks weren't checked on that car. But yet his house got raided. He was the first prime suspect. I mean, where's the common sense coming to the brains here?
In his statement, he says at 11:30 that night, or around about 11 o'clock that night, he took a cross-country route back home from Chelmsford so he could test his four-wheel drive car. Now, who does that at 11:30 at night?
On a snowy night in December and all.
And it just happens to be the night that they're bumped off. I mean, really? You know, you're like, yeah, you can take it all on face value, or you can look a little bit deeper and go, this guy was really manipulative.
Weren't there a certain doorman putting a safe house in Rettendon night at murders?
So there were certain people that weren't questioned as to where they were on the night and stuff.
So you got a question from Ron M. If Nichols is just a storyteller, why is he on protection?
More involved, obviously.
Well, because his statement was taken as valid, and that was why Tumo went to prison for 30 years.
Yeah, but so the day that Darren got pulled was just dodgy. He got pulled by 3 different police forces. Essex Police, I think Your Way, Sussex Police, and Regional Crime Squad, while being watched under an undercover Metropolitan Police investigation by McKelvey on the observation post that day. They couldn't find 10 kilos of puff, bruv, in a toolbox behind the passenger seat in his car. And then McKelvey had to pop his head out of his secret undercover operation, drive down the road, get Nichols out of the car, and finds the puff straight away in the back of the car, and then arrests him. And then that's it, wipes him down to Darren. Then he rolls over and becomes a supergrass for the biggest miscarriage case Britain's ever seen. Couldn't make
one
it
of
up,
them,
mate.
Yeah, I mean, there is a few out there, but, you know, I think this is the case, and this is why he's still on protection. You know, because he was taken and he was a supergrass. And I think probably not a lot of people like him.
Deborah's saying that she's just headed over to your channel to subscribe, Sasha, and she's asking, are you okay, love?
I'm okay, thank you. Yeah. I've been in recovery from losing my dad all year, and I'm getting back in action and getting back live again. So, yeah, thanks for asking.
All right, let's see. Unseen
Big love.
Unseen prosecution evidence next month may change opinions. Do you know what that means?
Yeah, the orchestrated stuff that's going to be coming out. I think I'll have a say when that comes out.
I don't know. And, you know, I'm always open to look at new evidence, as we all should be. Any evidence that comes out in either way, we're always open to look at it.
Ask me about the call to Bright. What do you mean? I'm the one that put that information out there. Oh, I do find it funny sometimes. Yeah, DC Bright got a phone call at 6:30 a.m. on the morning of the murders to tell him that he didn't recognise the driver, this police officer. He recognised Tony Tucker in the passenger, and he recognised Pat Tate, but he didn't recognise Craig Rolfe. Thought it was someone else. And that was at 6:30 in the morning. They didn't get found till 8:30 in the morning.
There was also another girl, wasn't there, that, what was her name, Melanie? Melanie Monk, that was visited that morning before it got light, so about 6:30, they said, that was told that they'd had their brains blown out, in her words.
And nothing's been done about.
Again, before it was reported.
Yeah, before it was even light.
So, it stands to reason that the police are involved. How many of them?
Well, why Jack and Mick gagged? If you do the crime and serve the time, like me, I can talk about anything from my past because it's all in the past, and it's all been done. It's done with, so I can talk about anything. So why can't Mick and Jack? I'm not even allowed to go and see them, bruv. Yeah? All I want to do is go and see Jack, buy him a pint, and say, I'm sorry, mate, for what happened. I'm trying to help. And I'm not even allowed to do that because it risks him going back to prison. I mean, who am I? I'm nobody. I'm just trying to help. I mean.
You can see that there is still an awful lot of silencing and an awful lot of tactics. And, you know, I mean, eventually people will kind of die and the truth comes out. That's generally what happens, you know. I mean, unfortunately, like with Virginia at the moment that you've got with her Epstein case, unfortunately she's gone, but it doesn't matter. Her book's out there and it's shining her light bigger than ever. You know, I just hope that Michael Steele and Jack Holmes have wrote their own book, so they might be gagged, but it will come out one day.
Yeah, absolutely gut-wrenching. I just finished Virginia's audiobook, and the allegations she made against her own father, just, it was sickening to yeah.
And this is one of the things that, I mean, my life's changed massively in the last 5 years, but it's been, you know, it has to be understood that not all fathers are good, not all mothers are good. And you know, in this case of Paul Betts, this is why all of my radars are off, because he's just not coming across as a good father. And unfortunately, some fathers and stepfather or stepparents, and I'm not singling out fathers, but unfortunately, you know, it is the case that they can do some really, really bad things, and when they're in control of their children. And we can't not be emotionally grown enough to be able to talk about these things so we can stop them happening. Instead of going, oh no, daddy wouldn't do that. Oh no, mother's a good girl, you know, really, because that is how these people are getting away with it. That is how they're getting away with hurting children across the board. And
some of it's so obvious as well, isn't it? Like Paul Betts with William Betts. William Betts is the PDF file and he's running his dad's barge boat in Scotland, mate. Still carrying on PDFing, mate. Still, yeah. Come on.
I mean, I know I mentioned it in the podcast, but I know your listeners, Sean, because I know what your audience are like, and they understand these things. Paul Betts moved to Scotland in 1999, which was not long after all of this happened. And then he bought a boat up there. Now, he had a boat down in Maldon in Essex when he was down there. And he obviously liked to drink, so he bought a boat pub. Now, that is still a boat pub, run by his son, who is convicted one of those twice over. Still offering to do magic tricks for kids in there, you know. This should be a public health warning. And I, you know, I've been contacted by people that have been and said that Paul Betts was writing statements to cover up for his son for what he'd done, that he was a nasty piece of work up there, and that it was, you know, well known that this family was a bad family up in Scotland. So none of this rings true to this guy at the same time going into schools, because and there should be a massive safeguarding problem there. You know, anybody?
Quite anybody sick going,
in it. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, it comes across the board to understanding that when people in power are abusing their power, when we're able to find them out, we need to shine the light on these people and why it's happening.
What's William got on his boat?
Ex-cop John Wedger came on and talked about the PDFs in the canal boats and the scam they were running. Just had to move.
I watched that. It was so illuminating. So illuminating, because I know this. And I know this to be happening in Sussex on the waterways. And how John explained it as to why they live on the waterways and why they're moving often. And, you know, also like with this whole Paul Betts thing, where he moved to in Scotland, well, it couldn't be more kind of Masonic up there where he was as well, you know. And this is also moving to the other ends of the earth, so he can't be put under scrutiny.
Got a question from Ron. Do you know why the restaurant owner didn't inquire about them not turning up for the meal?
Well, I think Tony phoned up, didn't he, to book it for, it was table for six people, then he booked it for eight. But then obviously that was it. It was left at that, and they got murdered that night. So,
yeah, they booked a meal that night that they never turned up for. Goldie, right, I agree with Goldie on the screen. I'm really tired of all the PDF files, because it is the biggest sickness in our society.
That's why I'm glad John brought up John Wedge there, because that whole thing, what John's doing, good on him, mate. But John Wedge has got my backing completely, mate. That man ever needs anything, I'm there. When we looked at William Betts and his boat, obviously, I was looking at what John Wedger was doing, and he mentioned about this culture of Rosie and Jim dolls being on the boats, and that's how they knew about each other. Guess what's on William Betts' boat? Rosie and Jim dolls.
Is there? And I didn't know that.
It looks so out of place.
Oh my
God. Don't look right. It just don't look right.
So, this boat is still owned by Janet Betts, Leah Betts' stepmom. She's the licensee. He works behind the bar.
How can he even serve alcohol? Oh, mate, So much can be said about that.
Lisa wants to know, is your dog a Staffy?
She's a chocolate tri American bulldog.
Oh, bless.
I think we've gone through all the questions and we're nearly at the hour. Is there anything you guys would like to say in conclusion then?
Just thank you for having us on. We'll keep the conversation going. I do believe that we'll get to the truth in the end. I do believe, like Billy Jasper said at the end of his podcast, the truth is like the sun. It always comes out in the end.
And James, do you have anything to say in conclusion? And can people follow you on socials?
They can if they want to, bruv. But obviously with my group, I ended up with, I had like 750,000 people behind me at my peak. And then someone got into the group, got my Facebook deleted. Then the group got taken off me. I got offered to go back on there in the last couple of weeks. But if I'm going to go back on that group, that's just to shut it down, because it's the official people that are involved now, like Sasha, Brian, all them, that we need to get together and we need to solve the case once and for all. That's for everybody involved. Pat Tate was a brother. He was a dad. Tony Tucker was a brother. He was a dad. Craig Rolfe was a brother. He was a dad. They all deserve to rest in peace, no matter what they did. Tony's dad deserves to rest in peace, no matter what happened. And then same with the Grasses, all their families. Some of them don't even know what their cousin's uncle's dad did 30 years ago. So I'm trying to cater and for everyone. And it's hard because you can potentially ruin people's lives now. If the truth come out now, if the shooter's still alive, he's going to get convicted. He's going to go away for life sentence, isn't he? So, yeah. It needs to be done in the most amicable, respectful way for everyone involved. That's an adult way,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. None of this bullying, narcissistic crap what's been going off for the last 15 years. I've had everything thrown at me, absolutely everything.
Nobody needs it.
Yeah,
yeah. When you're over the target, they try and shut you down. It just shows you're getting closer and closer to the truth.
Ain't that the truth?
When you try and do good work, it's like, bang, bang, bang at you. It's like, whoa. Just like Sasha's had it when she got into my old group, bro. It's like she had it.
I found this across the board in the last 5 years with anything. As soon as you start to put your neck out and say the truth, there will be a certain amount of people that will try and silence you. The bigger, the more important that truth is, the more they try and silence you, like you said. So you just got to take that energy and run with it.
Because all right, guys.
Now meowing at me.
Thank you for spending time with us. I'm going to let you guys go and close the show, and have a great rest of your weekend. Cheers, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, you too.
Cheers, James.
Thanks. All right. So, if you want to support Sasha, like I said, we have got Sasha's links in the description box: YouTube, Facebook, Substack, TikTok, radio station. I'll put them in the live chat again right now. And we are not done for the day, folks. Ex-cop Gary is coming on at 6. Let me just double check all this. Yep. So at 6 o'clock, Gary Waterman exposing his arrest, judges, and royal fraud. And he's got King Charles, Starmer, and the no longer Prince Andrew Windsor Mountbatten. Or Mountbatten Windsor on the thumbnail of that one. So that's 6 o'clock, just over an hour. So that's going to probably run for a few hours. And then on the 18th, we got the truth about Charlie Kirk, Bridget Gabrielle interview. And then we have got next Saturday night, the history of elite, royal, and Illuminati bloodlines. I'm hosting that one at 8 p.m. with Doc Brown, first time on the channel. That is going to be phenomenal, folks. I can't wait for that one. And then Kevin Annette is back on November the 29th with a special guest he's bringing on who is related to a priest who has been assassinated, that Kevin Annette believes, by the Vatican. So loads more great content coming up. If you missed the whole podcast with Sasha, the 2.5 hours me and Jen interviewed her, links in the description box, as is the Billy Jasper podcast we did a month ago. It's almost got 400,000 views. It's been very controversial. It got took down once. and put back up. But yeah, Billy Jasper served time for this case as well and is saying that he is innocent. And it looks like there's been a lot of shenanigans in putting people away while the real culprits remain at large.